The following is a lecture by His Holiness Gopala Krishna Goswami Maharaj on the topic The Story of King Puranjan, recorded on 29th of June 2007 in Toronto.
Gopi jana bala bhava vala dhari Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. The spiritual system is monarchy, but spiritual monarchy. There have been monarchs in the world, and this is a fact that the monarchs have wasted their wealth. And that is one reason why people lost faith in monarchy and replaced it with democracy. So the Vedic system was spiritual monarchy, in which the king was a devotee of the Lord, and the king would train his sons up also in devotion, so that when he assumed the Grihastha ashram, so that when he assumed the post of the king, he would know what to do. So King Prachita Maharishan had sons who were identified as Prachetas, and the Prachetas were sent by the father to perform great austerities, and when they were performing austerities, they attracted the attention of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave them a mantra that glorifies Lord Sri Krishna. And Lord Shiva was very pleased by the austerities of the Prachetas. They performed these austerities for how long? 10,000 years. So someone may say, in the modern day environment, how can you perform some austerity for 10,000 years? Mythology. It's not possible. A lot of Westerners abandon the Vedic teachings of mythology and making people believe this is just an imagination, fiction. It may not have been true. But it's not mythology. But people are unaware that the duration in different ages is different. And this incident took place in Satyuga, when the lifespan was 100,000 years. So the Prachetas were very surrendered. They stood in the water for 10,000 years and recited a mantra that was given to them by Lord Shiva. And what was that mantra? That mantra was, glorify Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Ishvara Parma Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Nadinanda Govinda, Sarva Karna Karnam. The fact that Krishna is Supreme is not only the conclusion of the Brahma Samhita, it's not only the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, it's the conclusion of all the great personalities, including Lord Shiva. Sahibu Narada Sambhu, Kaumara Kapila Manu, Pralado Janaka Bhisma Balirvai, Yasakirvaya. The 12 Mahajans, and one of them is Lord Shiva, and all of them acknowledge that Krishna is the Supreme. So, while the princes were undergoing austerities in the water, their father, King Prachinda Barishad, was engaged in performing fruitive activities. What are fruitive activities? Fruitive activities are activities they perform for sense enjoyment. Of course, they are superior to gross atheism. In atheism, you don't acknowledge the position of God. In atheism, you acknowledge that material nature at best is the cause of everything, and there's no such thing as God. In fruitive activities, you go a step further. You acknowledge there is God. You acknowledge there are scriptures. You acknowledge you need pundits and all these brahmanas, blessings and so on. But you want to use all this for what? For sense enjoyment. So, fruitive activities are condemned for those who want self-realization. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says, he compares fruitive activities to drinking poison from a golden cup. Poison, whether you consume from a golden cup or a paper cup, is there going to be any difference in the effect?
No.
It's going to have the same effect. So therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says, our business is not to engage in the activity. The spiritual activities may elevate you to a higher level, to the heavenly planets also, at best. But then again you have to come back. So the king was engaged in different types of spiritual activities. And Narada Muni took compassion upon the king and came there to instruct him about spiritual life. Narada Muni had a unique capacity to detect the sincerity of an individual and to show up at the right time in the right place to enlighten people. Just like there was a hunter called Mrigari who was half killing animals and getting great pleasure. Who was he saved by? Narada Muni. Dhruva Maharaj was going to the forest to look for God, but his ambition was to get a kingdom greater than his father, grandfather, so that he could teach someone a lesson. But at the same time, he had sincerity. So who showed up? Narada Muni, to guide him. So Narada Muni is a spiritual master of many great personalities. And Narada Muni took compassion upon the king and came to preach to King Prachina Barisha. He said, the chief aim of life is to free oneself of all miseries and to enjoy real happiness. I think if you made this statement in public, our goal is, the goal of my party is to make you free of all miseries and make you enjoy real happiness. Most people say, yes, I vote for you. Am I right, isn't it? Narada Muni said the chief goal of life is what? To achieve a twofold goal. One is to get rid of all miseries, enjoy and enjoy happiness. But Narada Muni said these two goals cannot be achieved by performing fruitive activities. So for the first statement Narada Muni made was to free oneself from all miseries. So, first of all, we have to identify what the miseries are. And we have to acknowledge that we accept that these are really misery. Birth, death, disease, old age, miseries caused by the mind, other living entities, and material nature. So these are major miseries, isn't it? Sometimes a person doesn't have a job, he feels a little sad. But these are major miseries. Disease, old age, miseries caused by mind, etc. So that should be a real goal. How to free oneself from these miseries. And if you really want to free yourself from these miseries, what do you have to do? Get a spiritual body. As long as you have a mature body, it's going to give you trouble, isn't it? You may be a pauper, you may be a king. You may be an American, you may be an Indian. Once Prabhupada was giving a press conference in Boston, some Americans. And this was in the early 70s, when India's image in the Western world wasn't as good as it is now. Not as the best, but it was a lot better now than that. So one American journalist approached him and said, Swamiji, you're coming from a poor, impoverished country. We are the leaders of the world. What are you going to teach us? So Prabhupada said, you may be the leader of the world, and India may be an impoverished country, but there's one thing common for both of you. So the man, journalist, was really curious. What is it? What is that? Prabhupada said, the death rate in both countries is 100%. So whether you come from a very advanced country or whether you come from an impoverished country, the death rate is what? 100%, isn't it? It's not in advanced countries, it is 99.9%. The death rate is 100%, it doesn't matter where you travel, where you reside. So the reality is that there is nothing but misery. And the scriptures explain that we should so employ the body that the body can be engaged in such a manner that you eventually obtain a spiritual body. And to obtain a spiritual body, you obviously have to pay a price, and the price is give up what is detrimental for spiritual advancement and what? Except what is conducive for spiritual advancement. So Narada Muni said, the chief goal of life should be, on the one hand, to free yourself of all miseries. And on the other hand, to realize happiness. It's not that we don't care for happiness. In the mature world, everyone wants to be happy, isn't it? You look at all the billboards on the streets, they all try to remind you that if you buy that product, you'll be happy, isn't it? Have you ever seen a billboard with a morose and ugly face? You always see billboards or commercials with smiling faces and handsome, beautiful faces. Am I right? Is that true? It's true universally. So everywhere, people do want to realize happiness. I mean, there's no question. But the only question is, how can you realize happiness? There's a nice statement by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj says that Nata Vidum Swarta Gatim Hi Vishnu, that people do not know how real happiness can be found. If you want real happiness, then the path is the process of pure devotional service. So King Prachina Parisha was engaged in performing fruitive activity. And when the king saw the great sage Narada Muni, he said, I do not know the ultimate goal of life, because my intelligence is bewildered by fruitive activity. So the king was bold enough to acknowledge that his intelligence is bewildered. One of the defects of modern society is that nobody really admits he's bewildered, am I right? Everyone likes to admit, no, I know what's best for me. And when a saintly person tries to enlighten him, what do they say? No, thank you, I know what is best for me. It's just like Bhakti Siddhanta used to give a story that once a person was so absorbed in flying his kite, like in India, they fly the kite. They also do it in the West, but on certain days. So he was so absorbed in flying his kite that he was about to fall off the roof. You know, he was flying, and he was about to fall off the roof, and somebody said, come on, careful, you're going to fall off the roof. And he responded, don't disturb me, let me fly the kite. So it's just like people are drinking poison, and we are trying to give them a glass of nectar. And they said, no, let me drink poison. However, King Prachina Parisha was more fortunate. When he saw Narada Muni, he said, oh, great soul! So he at once acknowledged that Narada Muni is a great soul. And Narada Muni is one of the 12 Mahajans or spiritual authorities. So the king said, I do not know the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, kindly instruct me in pure knowledge so that I can free myself from. So the king, even though the king was engaged on the wrong path, he knew that he was wrong. And in the core of his heart, he had the right intention. That is why he sent his sons to perform austerities, isn't it? Why he knew that he has to retire from worldly affairs, and so his king should get trained up. So therefore he sent his kings to the forest to practice austerities, where they had a good fortune of seeing Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave them the mantra by which they could progress spiritually. So the king knew that he's in the wrong path. And therefore he told another Rishi Muni, please instruct me in pure knowledge so that I can get out of the entanglement of fruitive activity. So the king recognized that sense enjoyment and fruitive activities are not the real goal of life, and the individual would just be wandering in different types of bodies if he doesn't cater to the process of pure devotional service. So the king was begging Narada Muni for what? For direction. So just like the king was begging Narada Muni for direction, we should also be begging for direction. How can I make spiritual advancement? And then Narada Muni gives an allegorical presentation. He was explaining to King Prachina Barishat by giving the story of another king. Like Narada Muni didn't tell him that this is your story. And after the king came to him and said, please instruct me so that I can get out of this entanglement of birth and death. I'm on the wrong path, please guide me. So Narada Muni then started to guide him by giving him an allegorical story of a king that is described here as King as Puranjan. Puranjan actually means, as I said the other day, the enjoyer of the body, one who wants to enjoy the body. So Narada Muni gave a story. Once upon a time, there was a king called King Puranjan, was very attached to his wife, children, was engaged in killing animals, was engaged in fruitive activities. So he describes the story of one who wants to enjoy this body and thus get destroyed. When you want to enjoy this body materially, you're virtually digging your own grave. Because when you do engage in activities contrary to religious principles, you do have to take on the reaction. So King Narada Muni is explaining to the king the story of King Puranjan, which is nothing but his own story. But he didn't say this is your life story. He explains there was a king who was engaged in the fruitive activity. So now, what is Narada Muni saying? Being disentangled in different types of mental concoctions and engaged in fruitive activities. So by and large, a sense enjoyer, whether it be a king or a pauper, he engages in a variety of mental concoctions and he engages in different types of fruitive activities. So fruitive activity in a sense means activity where the ultimate goal is to get some material benefit. I may be doing some sacrifice, I may be giving some donation as charity, but in exchange I have very high expectations. Just like people think that if I put $10 in a donation box, there should be $100 in return in my purse. You know? So, when we do sacrifice, but there is a certain amount of material expectation. Now, King Puranjan came completely under the control of material intelligence. That is what happens when your body, mind and senses are not in control, isn't it? Just like in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was asked by Arjuna, how is one compelled into the sinful acts even unwillingly? We know this is sinful. There's the inner voice that says, this is bad for you spiritually. But still, we go ahead and execute that sinful activity. So Arjuna's question on behalf of all of us was very genuine. How is one compelled into sinful acts even unwillingly? To which the Lord replied, what did he reply? Kama is a krodha se rajagun samudbhavaha. It is lust only, the all-devouring enemy of the living entity, which is always burning like fire, is never satiated. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we read the story of a king called King Yayati. This king Yayati had full facilities for sense enjoyment, far in excess of anything you can even dream of in the material world. And he had the facilities to engage in unrestricted sense enjoyment for 10,000 years. Not for 2 or 3 days. 10,000 years. But in the end, what did he say? In the end he said, I was just like a lusty goat who is about to be slaughtered and engages in sense enjoyment. And even after 10,000 years, what did the king find? His senses are still not satisfied. They're still saying, more, 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 give me more. So, the Bhagavatam makes this point that the nature of the senses is that no amount of material endeavor will ever satisfy them. It is just like the Bhagavatam gives another example of an itching sensation. You know, when you have a skin disease, you feel like scratching, isn't it? Am I right? I'm sure everyone experienced that. And when you scratch, you get some instant pleasure. But then the disease becomes worse. Am I right? Then the disease becomes worse. Therefore, when you have an itching sensation, what do doctors say? Huh? Don't scratch. You'll make it worse by scratching. Don't they say that? So, the nature of lust is, or sense enjoyment, the more you engage, the more you endanger yourself. You never reach a good point where you say, no, that's not for me. So the best way is to purify the senses. So Krishna says, it is lust only, the all-devouring enemy of the living entity. Then Krishna goes a step further and tells us, where can this lust be found? Where? Mind? What else? Intelligence and senses. Krishna says, the mind, intelligence and senses are setting place on this enemy known as lust. So what does this mean? Intelligence. Intelligence, people have intelligence, there's no question. Of course that intelligence is coming from Krishna, isn't it? I mean, ask any scientist to prepare intelligence and inject it in somebody. Ask any pharmaceutical company to manufacture a drug that will create intelligence. No. Intelligence is given by God, isn't it? So even if somebody is intelligent, rather than being proud, I am so intelligent, I'm a Nobel laureate, you should say, my intelligence has been provided by God. So therefore, I'm going to use this intelligence to glorify the Lord. That would be correct imitation of intelligence. So, Krishna says, their mind, intelligence and senses are the sitting place of the enemy known as lust. So we have intelligence. Use intelligence to serve God. You have mind. Use intelligence of your mind too. Remember the glories of the Lord, His past and etc. So that is correct utilization. So Krishna says, mind, intelligence and senses. Similarly, we have these senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch. These are known as knowledge-acquiring senses. So these knowledge-acquiring senses are also the sinning pains of this enemy known as lust. Eyes always want to see something vulgar. This ear will hear something mundane, isn't it? Doesn't matter in which language you're hearing a mature song, I can bet you 90% of the songs are based on the so-called definition of love, isn't it? Am I right? All over the world. So the mind, my ears want to hear something to fulfill the lust, the lusty desire of the ear. And so all these mind, intelligence, senses are engaged in satisfying the different lusty desires of the different senses. So Krishna says, slain is eternal enemy. How? How do you slay the eternal enemy? With a cannon. How do you slay the eternal enemy? What does Krishna say? With the weapon of knowledge. Therefore, slay the eternal enemy with the weapon of knowledge. So knowledge, how do you acquire knowledge? You acquire knowledge in the hearing process. We hear the Bhagavatam, we hear the Gita, we read the Bhagavatam, we study the Bhagavatam, and that helps us to eliminate what? It helps us to eliminate the influence of lust. Just like a disease can be checked with medicine, this disease of sense enjoyment can be checked, corrected, replaced by the power of devotion. It's not that in spiritual life we don't engage the mind in certain senses, but we engage it in a positive way so that the negative tendencies can be curbed. Like a restless child, a child has to be restless. He wants to do something or the other. So what does the mother do? The mother engages the child in a positive way so that he may not be destructive. So similarly, we have to learn the art. Krishna says, slay the eternal enemy with the weapon of knowledge. What Krishna means is, with the weapon of knowledge, we should understand what's right, what's wrong, and do what's right, and avoid what is wrong. So, over here now, the Muni is explaining that as long as we're controlled by material intelligence, the living entity who is also King Paranjan, all of you are also King Paranjan. We're all kings. You may say, you mean we are kings? Where is our kingdom? Your kingdom is this body. Your kingdom is this body. You can do what you want with this body. If you want to use this body to serve the Lord, it goes one way. If you want to use the body to forget the Lord, you act in a different way. Am I right? So you have jurisdiction. What's your jurisdiction? Jurisdiction of, at least over your own body. So you can all call yourselves king. I'm a king also. So you're all kings of your own bodies. And in the absence of spiritual knowledge, our tendency is to engage the mind in judgment senses, in sense enjoyment. And when you become aware of spiritual knowledge, you want to engage these in service of the Lord. So now the Muni is explaining that this King Paranjan, he was completely under the control of his material senses. And thus he was cheated. Now, we don't realize that our material senses and mind are the biggest cheaters. They are cheaters. We say, oh, I got cheated. I spent young days of my life chanting Hare Krishna. I could have gone and got a job and earned so much money. No, your senses are cheating us. How do the senses cheat us? The senses make us believe, if you do this, if you engage in sense enjoyment, you'll be satisfied. Then you go ahead and engage in sense enjoyment, and you say, I didn't get satisfied. Prabhupada once gave a story. There was a Brahmin. The Brahmin was feeling very hungry. And that whole town, there was no food anywhere. There was famine. But someone said, oh, in that Brahmin's house there's a food. But then that Brahmin was thinking, if I eat in the Brahmin's house, I will lose my caste. Because those days, if I eat in a Muslim's house, I will lose my caste. Because those days, the society was so conservative that if you ate in a Mahamna's house, drank water in a Mahamna's house, or sat down with a Mahamdan for long, then you would become an outcast. Even Rupa and Sanatan had become outcasts because they served at one time the Nawab Hussain Shah government. So Rupa and Sanatan never entered the Jagannath Puri temple also, like Haridas Thakur. They never went inside. So this Brahman was very hungry and he was debating, should I eat food in a Muslim's house and lose my caste? But he was so hungry that he finally went and begged that Muslim to give him some food. The Muslim gave him food. But the food was burnt. It was so badly burnt that he couldn't even taste it. He just tasted it and vomited it out. So then the Brahmin said, I could neither satisfy my hunger and at the same time I've lost my caste. So when you engage in such gratification, that's exactly what you're headed for. You won't be able to satisfy your senses, and at the same time you miss the opportunity of the human life to cross over the ocean of birth and death. So if we ever think that if I take this dosage of sense enjoyment, I'll be satisfied, so don't be an illusion. You'll never be satisfied. That is the conclusion of whom? That's the conclusion of the Lord, and that's the conclusion of the great sages. So we should have faith in the conclusion of the Lord and the faith and the conclusion of the sages. Just like you hear, you read. If you drink poison, you'll kill yourself. Do you actually drink poison to see? Let me see whether I'm going to kill myself or not. Maybe most people kill themselves by drinking poison, but maybe I'm an exception. So let me try drinking poison. You do that? No, you don't do that. So the hearing process, you've heard that poison kills, so you stay away. So through the hearing process of the great sages, we've heard that the senses can never be satisfied by material endeavors. But if you engage the senses positively in spiritual endeavors, then they can be satisfied. Therefore, those who are intelligent take to the path of devotional service, engage the mind and senses in service to the Lord. That is the true medium of happiness. So, the king had said, Narada Muni told the king, our real business is how to free oneself from material miseries and how to find real happiness. And obviously, if you want real happiness, you have to renounce what is detrimental for spiritual advancement. So Narada Muni is instructing King Puranjan how to make spiritual advancement. And therefore, we should not get bewildered when we read the story of King Puranjan, because Narada Muni is really describing how a gross materialist who is the enjoyer of his body becomes the slave of his material intelligence, wife, senses, etc. And in the end, he's never satisfied. So it's a very interesting story where Narada Muni is explaining in great detail how King Puranjan goes for different types of sense enjoyment. So we should take advantage of these stories and recognize that if you really want to please control the mind, intelligence, senses, if we really want to satisfy them, we want to free ourselves from material miseries and enjoy real happiness, then we have to take to the process of pure devotional service. And that's the only medium through which one can really be satisfied. Hare Krishna.